First speaker, and that's Alan.
Manatta called Alan. Speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using and are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Okay. What? Sure. I registered for this convention back in January, and I checked a little box that said I'd be willing to speak at a workshop. I did that for a few years. Didn't really expect anybody to call. Figured they would get somebody local. I'm from Philly area. And I got a call about a month or two ago, and I was interviewed. 20 questions. How do you identify yourself? You know, all the things I believe in, all that stuff. I said, well, we'll get in touch. And I didn't hear anything. Well, I found out afterwards that the person who was supposed to contact me decided that they weren't going to participate in their position. And it almost fell through the cracks when they were confirming whether I was going to be here or not. That's when I found out I was speaking. And the guy said, are you willing to speak on the three-star general? I said, what's that? He said, insidious, cunning, and baffling. I said, well, I've heard those words before. But I thought I was going to, you know, maybe I missed it. I mean, I just celebrated 16 years on Monday, and one day at a time, through the grace of God, in this program. And the only difference between me and somebody who's got one day clean is I have a little bit more of the wisdom to know the difference. So anyway, he said, it's at 12:15 on Saturday. I said, ouch, because I already had the golf outing scheduled. Let me call my sponsor and see what he tells me to do. And I called my sponsor and he said, I'm not going to make that decision for you. That's an easy choice. You just have to you decide what you want to do. I thought for a second, and I always wind up playing with Alan Jay. He's actually part of this convention committee this year. I called him up, and I said, how would you guys feel if I just played the front nine and then went to speak at a workshop? He said, wow, I wish I could do that. So that's what I did. I was out golfing this morning, did well, felt good, and now I'm here. But I was thinking, or actually I was thinking and I was trying not to think about what I was going to share. So I went and looked up the words like a good addict and wrote them down and figured I was going to give you the definitions, but, you know, I'm going to let you guys look up the words if you want to. Something that I'm working on with my sponsor is I'm trying to learn how to share at meetings and not speak at meetings. And it just started happening within the last year. When I got clean, the area that I got clean was really, really big on knowledge, big on information. They took that basic text apart, dissected it, put it back together again. I looked up a ton of words, did a lot of writing, and I learned how to speak and sound good. And what happened as a result was I got stuck on the fourth step from 1994 to 2004 because I had all this knowledge and a couple things happened. I figured there was nothing else for me to learn. And when I uncovered my fourth step in my fifth, it was all about entitlement. I had all this entitlement that drove all my behaviors because I felt I was dealt a raw deal and I was owed everything from my parents and society and everything like that. So how can you have a sense of entitlement and a sense of owing at the same time? So I wasn't able to really get past that. And finally, when I started to learn how to share my experience, strength, and hope, I realized that I have a sense of owing now. I have a sense of I want to give back what was freely given to me. And I have a debt to repay that I could probably never, ever repay. So I want to be in service. I want to serve. I want to help the recovering addict. I prayed before I got up to be able to carry a message of recovery and from a higher power to help the person that I cannot help. And that's what I usually pray for before I speak. Nothing more, nothing less. But I was thinking about, like I said, for the last week or so, I'm going to share about insidious, cunning, and baffling, and then it hit me yesterday. All I have to do is tell my story. That's full of insidious, cunning, and baffling. So I stopped trying to figure out what made me an addict a long time ago. I just am. When I learned about addiction and where it strikes, my thoughts and feelings, I'm going to try not to tell you what I know. I'm going to try and give you my experience. It's going to be difficult. I'm self-conscious about that right now. My wife wanted me to tape myself at a meeting in my neighborhood on the 10th step the other day, and I said, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I'm just real self-conscious about how I'm going to sound because I'm trying to adjust how I'm sharing. And I apologize to her. I shouldn't be like that, but that's just my nature. So when I learned what addiction was, the way I think and feel, what makes me an addict is not what I do, it's why I do what I do. I was able to trace my addiction way back to before I ever used, which led me to believe that I always was an addict. I just self-medicated to deal with it. Way back when I was 10 or so, I didn't start using it until I was in college. When I was 10 years old, I remember having a superiority complex and an inferiority complex at the same time, depending upon who I was with. That's how I felt. Most of the time, I felt superior, better than. But a lot of times, I didn't. And after a while, I just, I was always craved attention. And it didn't matter, negative attention was better than no attention at all. And I used to get jammed up in school for doing silly stuff, the class clown. And I got pulled out of public school, put in a private school for emotionally disturbed children. Tell me that's not the disease of addiction. If they only knew about addiction the way we know about it now, in 1968, I would have stayed in public school. But I was in a private school, and I used to manipulate the teachers and the other students around me and play with their heads to get a rise out of them. It was entertainment for me. And after about 3 years, I said, you know what? I think I'm wasting my time here. I need to get back into mainstream. And I wanted to get back in, and I persuaded my parents and the counselors to put me back in the public school. But unfortunately, they decided that I wasn't ready to go back into the ninth grade, so I went into the eighth grade. And that left a bitter, bitter taste in my mouth. All the people that I was growing up with in a neighborhood, it was like I flunked a grade. And it was, that's when that sense of, well, you know what? I may as well not try anymore because the rug was pulled out from under me. That's when that raw deal that I spoke of started to really eat away at me. But I proved that, you know, I could do well because although they put me in with the students that needed extra attention, and I did not like it because the teacher was spending most of the time disciplining the students, I got friendly with the people who were doing the rostering, and I said, I could do better. Put me in with the advanced class. I got a D it was science class. I got a D in the class that needed the teacher's attention and a B in the advanced class without studying. That was my whole thing. All through school, I didn't need to study. I just absorbed what I wanted to absorb, did well in the classes that I was interested in and not well in the classes I wasn't interested in. But I carried that resentment with me for a long time. And eventually, I decided to. When I was in college, I decided I was going to. I wanted to fit in with a crowd, and I allowed some people to get high in my car because they didn't have any place to get high. And I wasn't. And I had always said that just say no type thing that people used to say back then. And I don't know where it came from out of left field. One day, I had to have first-hand experience with it. I wasn't able to take somebody else's first-hand experience. And I tried it, and I thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. And next thing, I'm a spokesman for marijuana. All right? And I even manipulated my parents to allow me to grow it in the house. So, oh, man, I was cunning, okay? I was cunning. But, you know, one substance led to another. You know, I was 13 years in active addiction. At the end of my active addiction, I was throwing the pipe out of the window and going to get it the next morning. Okay, tell me that's not insidious. Okay, I was trapped. I was in the grip. And I couldn't do anything about it. I finally got tired of fighting my disease. I finally got sick and tired of me. Rehab in 85, rehab in 88, not because I wanted to get clean, because I wanted to get people off my back. One of the times I went away was because my dealer said, if you don't go away and stop using all the product, we're going to take all your customers away from you. Because I was selling the stuff too. Well, you know, finally in 1990, I decided I had enough. I couldn't go on anymore. I didn't have any more good ideas left. I did a massive, huge surrender. I said, I'm going to go away this time, and I'm going to do things differently. The difference between one of the main differences was I had willingness. I had desire. And that, I believe, is the crux of whether somebody's going to get this or not. It all boils down to how much willingness you have, how much desire you have. I believe that the recovery that I have today is a byproduct of me having the desire to practice principles, not in the practicing of the principle. It's in the desire to call my sponsor, not in talking to him. The desire, the willingness to make a meeting, not attending the meeting. That's what I believe today. So I walk through the rehab with a pad and a pencil, and I was taking notes this time around. Instead of counting throughout the days when I could get out, I was doing a whole 180 degrees. And when it came time to go for, I had this aftercare meeting, and they said, "What do you want to do?" And my first reaction was, my first good thought, more disease, cunning, baffling, insidious, was, I'm going to go back to the bar, go back to the room for rent above a bar. And, you know, I can do this myself. I can make meetings. I'm going to find a sponsor. And then I had a moment of sanity, and I decided to take suggestion. And they told me, "You're going to go to a halfway house." I said, "Where?" They said, "K&A, Philadelphia." I said, "You know what? I don't care. I want this." That's where I used in the end, in that neighborhood. One time I walked all the way from Northeast Philadelphia down to Kensington and Allegheny to cop because I only had enough money for one bus ride back. So I walked all the way down there, copped, took the bus back. And it didn't matter that people were dropping like flies outside in that neighborhood. You know, getting hot urines, getting kicked out, you know, shot, all kinds of stuff. I almost got shot in that neighborhood one time, copping. And I used to drive a cab, and I used to purposely pick people up in North Philly because I could, or take people down there. And a lot of cab drivers refused to take fares down there. But I would go for those fares because I knew I could get paid and go cop right away. But in the end of my active addiction, I couldn't pick up a phone and call somebody and say, "Can I come over and get something?" I didn't have anybody left to call. I had to go down to North Philly to cop or Kensington. So anyway, I started to do things differently. And I almost got kicked out of the halfway house a few times because I had, quote, a program within a program. I was trying to do NA, but there was a halfway house's rules. And any time I have a sponsee or I'm working with somebody that's in a halfway house facility, I tell them it's only temporary. You're not going to be here forever. Just go with the flow, and you'll get through it, and you'll get out, and then you can live the NA way. Just do it their way for now. Eventually, I got out, and I went through, and things just started to click for me because I was learning how to live with my disease. I was learning how to live with addiction, and I wound up, educating myself, getting a good job, and started to work some steps with a sponsor, and that's when I got all this huge amount of education, but that was, very, it backfired on me, because I got stuck on the fourth for 10, 11 years, because I had all this, the knowledge. Now that's baffling. That's baffling to me, because I wanted to finish the fourth step, and every time I picked up the pen, I kept getting, discouraged by it. And I would ask a million people, "How did you do it? How did you get through it?" And everybody would give me little tricks that they came up with. They would say, "Okay, put it in front of your bed before you go to sleep. That way you got to step over it, and then you'll think about it." Nothing seemed to work. One day I asked a guy who I had heard speak, "How did you get through it? He said, let's get together. And we got together for dinner, and I wasn't looking for a new sponsor because I thought I had the best sponsor still. Although when I asked this guy, let's see if we can go over to four step where I am in it right now, because I think I'm lost, I'm not in the right direction. And he checked with his sponsor, and he said, no, just finish. Pick up the pen. Pray for the willingness to write. Well, this new guy said, you know what? You should have been on this a long time ago. We're going to give you a deadline. A month from today, you're going to finish this. Whatever you've written, you're going to write. If you're not writing anymore, you're done. And one of the things I found out was the feelings that people go through when they're doing a fourth step, if they do it in a timely fashion, were gone. And I couldn't write about stuff that didn't apply anymore. So we finished the fourth step in a month, 5th, 6th, 7th. I finished the 12 steps a few months back. Finally. And now, you know, I always thought that I would be, you know, if you did a thorough fourth, you would be, you know, you would never have to go back and do the steps over again. Well, that changed when my sponsor decided he was going to do a fourth step for a second time. But so I'm getting ready to I actually said, let me go back to the sixth and see if there's anything that I missed there. He said, your steps, you do what you want to do. I'll help guide you through them. I'm always looking to him to help make decisions for me. I'm 16 years. I'm still second guessing myself. Okay? That's my disease still trying to tell me that I don't know how to live. Doesn't matter how much time I have. But I'm working on my people skills with him now. That's big. Because I really didn't know how to talk to people for a long time. And that's very apparent in my job when I get my annual reviews from my boss. My boss said to me just recently, that's just your personality, okay? He said, as Alan is, I uncovered $1 million worth of charges that should have gone from one budget to another. So I got a, you know, attaboy for it. But in the review, he put down, Alan is tenacious when in his research to the point of almost being unbearable. Okay? You know, that's like positive and negative at the same time. I said to my boss, okay, great, thanks. You know, I guess it's thanks. He said, you're going to go down as a pain in the ass in history like I am. I thought, well, if it's like my boss, it's got to be good. And he said, that's just your personality. That'll never change. Well, I didn't like that. Okay, so I thought about it, and I was going to write in the little comments at the bottom, but I decided, when I sign it and give it back to him, I sat down with him, and I said, well, he knows I'm in recovery. I had to tell him, because when I went to apply for clearance at a bank so I could have access, my fingerprints came up as a disposed record. So I had to prove that the case was disposed of. So I wasn't going to let my boss find out about it without me telling him. So I told him. He knew I'm in recovery. I told him I ran into the wrong people. I did some things that I shouldn't have done, drug-related. He knows I'm in recovery. So I walked up to him when I gave my review back, and I said, he said, it's my personality. Well, through the process of recovery, I am trying to understand today rather than be understood. Something I recently learned about from my sponsor. And he said, okay, proof will be in the pudding. But those are some of the things, you know, I'm learning a lot about myself now through working with a sponsor. And on any given day, I may be driving down the road, and all of a sudden I have this sense of impending doom. Life is great, and all of a sudden I feel like angry at the world. I feel like crying or something. And then I realize that's just my disease again, trying to tell me that I'm worthless. And it wants to wake up, and it wants to run my life. And I'm learning how to live with addiction today through you people. Okay? Through, you know, there was the people that came before me were real helpful in helping me learn about the disease of addiction, but I'm learning most from the people that came after me. Because those are the ones that are that remind me what it's like out there. I don't need to roll the dice. I don't need to take a chance. I did this, you know, when I had about 10 years clean, I decided that I wasn't like you people anymore, and I didn't need to go to meetings, and I wasn't like, oh, well, I'm going to go and use. It was, I just don't need this. And for about 9 months, I didn't go to meetings, I didn't call my sponsor, and I didn't use over it. And then one day, a friend of mine asked me to share, and I said, well, you know, I haven't been to meetings in a while. He said, it doesn't matter because you have a lot of knowledge. There's that knowledge again that kicked my butt that I want, you know, that I want people to hear. Well, I went and shared for him, and it lit the fuse for me, and that was like 6 years ago, and I've been back, you know, ever since, going strong, being of service, trying to help people, and one of the greatest things that I've learned in this recovery is be a willing sponsee. Go after your sponsor. Try and get what he has. You'll help him, you'll help yourself. It's the greatest thing when you can be of service. When you can, and that's what I think I read that in the Just for Today meditation this morning. Be of service. Okay? Make yourself available. You'll take yourself out of yourself. You won't think about your own problems. And you'll help somebody. You may help somebody, you know, get another day. You may help them, you know, live with addiction. You know, my addiction is not going anywhere. I'm not, you know, I'm trying to live a better way of life. I do that. And I hope that I'm going to be able to share my experience, strength, and hope without being self-conscious. It's hard. My sponsor said it took him 20 years to finally bridge from sharing his knowledge to sharing his experience. So I'm 16 years. I guess I'm getting a few-year jump on this. But it's good to be here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. I'd like to turn over the meeting to our second speaker, Ulysses. Okay?
Okay. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm an addict. My name is Ulysses. Speaker statement. I guess y'all wasn't here when it got read the first time, so I'm going to read it again to you. The NA member chose to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who's working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not abundance of NA members with substance clean time and experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Bessie Texas, for instance, remind us that NA members from other areas are willing to travel long distance. Hey, my mama, I ain't even got to speak and I'm about to cry, y'all. Shit, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold a second here. Let me find where I was. I was on the long distance one. Drive long distance to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. Speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is our not necessary to dwell exclusive on our active addictions or war stories, because we are all known what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope. I'm going to have to put them right back on in a minute. Again, I'm going to add, my name is Ulysses. I'm truly grateful to the God of my understanding and the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and y'all just don't know what it feels like to be alive. I was sitting here just listening to this guy. You know, like sometimes, like, he said, like, there were some things that he wasn't going to do. I did everything that he said about the lips. I looked the words up. I brought them to, it wasn't like they called me and asked me a couple months ago. It was like almost 6 months ago. They didn't interview me. They said, well, good, you come in and speak. What'd you do? The barnyard thing. On the beach, where they burned the fire in the morning time. I said, hell, it's cold at 6 o'clock in the morning. And I'm probably going to be tired from the dance. And like, you know, and I said, no, I can't do that. But I will do something else if you give me something else, but I can't do that because, really, I just don't get up at 6 o'clock in the morning because I've been at the dance. Now, it wasn't no form of manipulation or anything. I was being honest. Now, I went and I looked up the words. Because, like, before I share this, because, like, when I get the time that's here, this end, right? Because it was, you know, I need to say that, like, look, if you go to our literature looking for this, you ain't gonna find it. This is the topic that is no longer available in our literature. And to be honest with you, I don't think it was worded as that when it was in our literature. I went into some old timers. I did some research on that shit too, because I wanted to find out, like, because we were talking about chronic bafflers and insidious of a disease. Listen, they got some definitions of shit, man, that really sums it up real carefully. Like, because, like, you be sitting here new, and like, right now, like, when this guy was sharing, right, I'm going to show you, like, baffling. You sitting in the meeting. The speaker's speaking, but he ain't saying what you think he's saying. Because you so up in your own damn head and blaming him for what you ain't getting. You do the popcorn ass and jump up and run out of the meeting. And then go tell everybody, oh, he really didn't share shit. Let me tell you, if you think I don't share shit, you probably didn't bring shit in here with you. Now, I'm not saying that for a personal attack. I'm talking about a disease caught in baffling in the city. Look, Phil, look. It's got it here right. Watch this, Mark. Watch what he's saying. I'm going to go to the insidious one. Working on. Spending harmful in a subtle or subtle manner. Insidious rumors. An insidious disease. Intended on entrapping. Look, can't get to a meeting. Life there becomes so freaking hectic. Look, I don't need y'all no more. Another look. That's IP paper number 5. I don't need y'all anymore. Done grown up enough from the outside. We was talking about how the disease have us trapped, walking around, all dressed up, feeling like we really need to talk about, but we can't talk about because, like, we don't want you to say, damn, they still sick after all them years. What's wrong with them? Don't they know where the step sales? I'm talking about a disease that says baffling. The ability to sit up in your head and take your best thinking and use it against you. 14 years ago, I looked in the mirror at the detox. You know this little saying they give you to go in the mirror, look at yourself, tell yourself that you love yourself today. 14 years ago, I looked in the mirror, and I was telling my friends earlier, I looked in the mirror, and I said the words. I wanted to believe them. But life, the disease, chronic, baffling, insidious, had made it so impossible. From its actions in my life at an early age. I'm talking about a disease that, like, look, in the first step of the literature. Because sometimes you be thinking like, well, hell, he just talk about the drugs. No! Watch this here. Hell, I ain't finding that. Hey, look, I'm gonna show, like you say, I'm gonna show exactly what it says. It says, manifesting itself in ways. What it saying? That diagnosis. Indetectable. Look, I'm talking about a disease that will just have you believing that you are living a life of recovery just because you stopped using drugs, Ulysses. I'm talking about a disease that had from an early age. It just, an early age. Subtle. It came upon me in my family at an early age. We was talking about like a disease that had robbed me from self-esteem long before I knew what self-esteem was. I went to my father, I said to him, like, I'm in recovery now. I'm talking about because my father had been in the 12-step program in 67. And I'm talking to him about this. And he said, well, in order for you to have your self-esteem taken from you, you have to have had some to begin with. And being in the family that I was in, when I did some inventory of my life history, I just didn't see why I ever had felt good about me. Ever felt good about me. On my best day, feeling good about me was an impossible task. I was talking about right now, I got a shirt in my car. I got this work shirt on right now. I got a shirt in my car. It's a cute little shirt. And like, I was getting ready to go put the shirt on. And I started saying, I don't need that damn shirt. Shit, I'm going to be up behind the pole. Shirt ain't going to make no difference. It's the message. I wanted to put the shirt on because the shirt looked good. But I started thinking about it. I'm getting ready to sweat. Might cry. Might do some things. Might take the shirt off. I'm getting ready to take my shoes off in a few minutes. Because, like, I'm talking about, look, I'm getting to the point of, like, being okay with me. Where the cunning, baffling, and cities is starting to change with a loving and caring and giving God. Where the transformation is starting to lift and remove me from me. For I can be able to see in the mirror today and actually, like, look. Shit, I was out of mirror. I love me. You said you're going to love me until I learn to love myself. I was telling my friends, and I started to learn to love me. Now the same people that love me, I'm learning to give them the love that they gave to me. Because like some of them is like where I was when they was loving me. You didn't get that one. That means that some of the members who had just did enough work, who had just did enough work to love me into this fellowship, stop right there. 14 years later, I still see them right there. Now I got to do for them what they had did for me. You look at the old time and you say, damn, why are they still sick like that? On any given day, this disease has the ability to rob you of everything you learned yesterday. How safe do you really feel right now without a 12-step program, you good recovering ass Ulysses? Listen, I'm talking about like it talks like condom, baffinous, insidious. It's talking about like this disease on any given day has the ability to make me look like I ain't did shit in 14 years. But I don't want you to know. Because like if I share, like if I go tricking yesterday, for some damn reason, somebody will remind me of this shit 7-8 years later. Like it was just one day. Why? You ain't got nothing else to do. Insidious, to set upon with the intent to harm with no mercy. I don't want to use, newcomer, don't want to use, don't have to use. Grateful just for just not using is enough sometimes. Got a house, got a car, got all that shit. Just don't want to use. Look, my wife was like 25 years into a relationship. 23 and a half years into a relationship. Now I'm going on 26 years. My wife decided one day she just no longer wanted to be married to my ass. Insidious. Got trapped right in my mind. Had never really thought about killing her. You see, I'm talking about needing some step work in moments. In the day, not yesterday. Look, I was clean as hell yesterday. I mean clean. I did not find it necessary to live in my disease yesterday. It just ain't gonna, when I got up this morning, I had to make another commitment about the day of doing the same thing I did yesterday. Because my wife wasn't leaving me over 25 years. She was leaving me over the shit that happened that day. That day. It just reminded her of the shit that had happened over all those years. Listen, you stick with that one right there, right? Watch this. Reminded me of the shit that had happened over 25 years. Look, shit, I got a couple minutes. To frustrate or check a person by confusing or perplexing symptoms. Over the years, it's like when you don't have a program to combat this disease, it gets up on you and like it like you ever like just fuck up 1 minute. And for some reason, it takes you all about the whole life of your fucking up. And you get baffled. You get confused. You don't know what to do. Call your sponsor. You don't know what to do. Put a step on it. You don't know what to do. Call somebody. You don't know what to do. I'm stuck. Why am I stuck? I'm stuck. I'm stuck because I have a disease that renders me helpless when I take over my own will, removing God from the picture totally. Totally. Look, I know about successing. I'm on the program. I'm on the road of recovering. Life is good for me. I'm looking good, smelling good, shit just good. Crazy as a bed bug in meetings every day. Still sick. You know when they talk about sharing clean and living dirty? How about sharing dirty, living dirty, still in meetings, still not getting any help because I'm refusing to let anybody help me because I can figure this out. 6.5 years clean, lost my damn mind. I was riding down the road, left a meeting, riding down the road. I ain't never tricked. I'm riding down the road, cunning, baffling, insidious. You ain't getting what you... Look, man, I had like been committed to this woman. You ain't getting... But look here. I was committed to her, but I had forgot like when I was a child, man. I was just... Look, at 6 years old, chronic masturbator. Look, the disease had me at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. We used to have an outhouse. You know what an outhouse is? Where the shit don't go anywhere. Where when you go in it, the flies be flying up on your ass and you don't want to bite you. Outhouse, I'm 6 years old. I'm making a conscious decision to sit there and masturbate, smelling all the previous asses that had sat there before me because it told me that I couldn't go back home and face my daddy because I couldn't tell him, look, I'm tired of you whooping me for nothing. I'm tired of all this shit that's happening, but I couldn't say that at 6, 7 years old. So the masturbation became a way of relief. And then and then I hung up in the program and find myself acting out on a behavior that had started manifesting itself a long time ago. You know how you talk about being a thief, cunning, baffling, insidious. Like, I started using drugs and started stealing. Hell no, I started stealing then use drugs. It just intensified shit when I started using. I was crawling under my mama bed. I know I come to the program, I was here. I remember saying, crawling under people. I hear people talking about crawling under their mama beds, stealing stuff, doing this and doing that, right? I was saying to myself, shit, I started using when I was 21 years old. Jail institution and death was already a big part of my life. I didn't start using until I was 21 years old. Now get the head. This disease so kind of bad for the cities. When I started using, I was working at a TC. Therapeutic community. I am a counselor at a therapeutic community. I got to go to work facing addicts every day that's trying to get one day clean. Why haven't I relapsed? Because no matter what I go through, I have seen hope a long time before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. Now I'm stuck at this point with the trick. Like I'm riding down the road and like it's my first time out. I don't know what to expect. I don't know what to do. But I just know that I hear people share it in meetings. Sometimes you share some shit in meetings. Especially where you sold or work at and don't give the fucking address. I ain't that well. Because I didn't know where this particular street was. Until I heard a girl share it in a meeting. I left the meeting. She was cute. She came around and she left and I don't know. It just coincided. Things like played out like that. And I looked around and somebody said, oh, she relapsed. And I was like, I don't know. Hell, I guess I just wanted to use somebody all the time. So I said, damn, that particular night, I went looking for her. I rode from like the meeting end at 10 o'clock. I rode from 10 o'clock to 5:30. This is a work day. I'm not high. I'm talking about a disease that will lift me up out of me in a minute to take me with it. I'm talking about the same disease I was telling you about to Mel that woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Not high. I'm not high. I was using at the time. I'm talking about the disease that woke me up at 3 o'clock in the morning, right? What? Woke me up 3 o'clock in the morning. I hadn't got high all that day. I had intention on going to work the next morning. It woke me up. I used to sell drugs. I lived on the fourth floor. I used to have to drop this thing out the window for the people.
put their drugs in it, send their money up, throw the drugs on the ground. It woke me up and said, look out the window, see if anybody out there. I had no intention on getting high. It just woke me up in the morning. I just woke up and said, go look, see anybody out there. I look out the window, and all of a sudden the son of a gun, he said, hey, you know you throw them on the ground, they may have left one. I ain't sold no drugs in 3 fucking days. I had been using for the 3 days. But can you go in there and get the cunning bathroom? And I just grabbed me, had me going downstairs, looking in the alleyway. And I wasn't looking for no crack either. I used to do a drug called Woo-Yah. I'm not going to give you the ingredients because some of you might relapse and go try to cook this shit up. But what would it do to you? It would like make you forget what happened for 2 and 3 days. Like, I started using, forgot that I locked my wife in the bedroom. Left my house, come back 3 days later. She locked in the bedroom. She can't call the landlord because I done changed the locks on the door from paranoia. She locked in the bedroom. And all I could say was, when I got there on Tuesday morning, was, honey, is you going to work today? Because when I left my house, I still had drugs there. I just wanted her to hurry up and get the hell out for I could go to using. Then I found a program, a remedy for this disease. Because like my behavior had become so outrated at one point. I'm doing meetings, I'm doing a convention. And for the next damn person to tell me, let me tell y'all something. I do a lot of conventions. I am not addicted to conventions. I love doing meetings. I treat these as a meeting. I love doing meetings. I do a lot of them. I can afford to do a damn lot of them because I'm not using and I'm not spending my money on all these damn clothes anymore. I'm not buying all these damn shoes to impress you anymore. There's some things that I can afford to do that I like doing. You say you buy a car? Fine. I got the damn car. I ain't getting there nothing. And I ain't gonna try to justify and rationalize why I do a lot of conventions. Because I am an everyday addict. And you read on February 28th, everyday addict? I am an everyday addict. Because an everyday addict needs a program because this disease is cutting back in the cities. Now, I get back in the program after all that craziness, right? Now, my sponsor got a favor saying everything that goes on with me, he got one thing that he says to me. Put a step on it. Always begin with the first one. It's usually one that works for you. No matter how crazy you are, you ever like get in there and your disease take you to it. Like, you be fucked up, right? Look, I'm putting this on me. I be fucked up. I call someone to help me with my dilemma. We get to talking, but then they tell me, well, it sounds like that's some 6-step work shit. I think it's a good idea because they got some experience. Now, this was when I first came around. But my sponsor say, you just can't work on that issue straight from the 6-step. Because when you surrender to it, you just pull a character defect out and said, hey, look, I'm becoming tired already. I'm not going to do that no more. You hear me? I was riding in my car, 5:30 in the morning. The end result of me riding in my car that morning was that, look, I had obsessed with this for so long. It had me in the grip for so long. Like, I went down this one street and I thought I seen her. I thought it was her. I shot around this block. You know how the men do. I shot around this block, shot back up this block, I came back down this block, only discovered it was a telegram post and a freaking trash can. I got you. That is the only thing that got me to go home. But the disease, it progressed. I'm talking about a disease that would manifest in areas of your life. Like spending all my money and filing bankruptcy when I'm making almost $250,000 a year with my business. Losing my mind. But I'm clean, y'all. No, my sponsor say, that ain't clean. Any day that you are caught in the grip, it's in our literature, any day that you are caught in the grip of the disease of addiction, your ass is just on absence. Just on absence. It's the disease of addiction, it says in our literature that it manifests itself. Like, look, I'm doing meetings, I look clean. Because I'm in a meeting. I want to be clean because I'm saying I'm living, I'm doing the program. But in the program of recovery, it tells me, like, this disease won't even let you understand what it says in the literature really to you. You ever read some shit in there and it changes it for you? Then you go get some members and they get put together. Then all of a sudden you got some good experience about it because you thought you knew. That was me. Now, I don't write shit. I do sometimes, but I don't write a lot. Because I got dyslexia and I have trouble spelling, so I have to use my computer. Now, I'm glad, thank God for a computer. I talk to it and it goes to writing shit. But that was my excuse for not doing step work in the beginning. But then I'm glad for the literature of the flat book when they told me, hey, look at here. Look, this is a step working guy. Sometimes you got to live this shit. It ain't necessary that everybody's going to be able to write this shit. Write the steps, write the steps, write the steps. How about hell? Look, grow up and live sometimes. What happened to me was that my life have formed full circle. Now, my wife ain't left me because I got out of the bathroom of thinking about killing her and killing me and killing everybody else that came involved with me at the time of this craziness in 3 days, right? I get out of this. I started looking at me. I started applying some principles in my life. I started getting better. My wife said, hey, she want to be with me again. What I tell my friends, a couple days later, my wife laying in bed, I go in there and tell her, after I did some inventory work about my relationship with her, and told her, hell, I think I might not want to be with you now. Because sometimes you grow up and you get well and you start seeing things that just ain't okay with you about people. I had been doing so much for her, just in order for her to not leave me, loving me and trying to keep her from leaving. That's all that cooking, cleaning, sewing. Oh shit, I did a whole damn 9 yards. My wife wanted the responsibility to go to work and come home. Had to lift a damn finger. I even drove Miss Daisy everywhere she needed to go. I'm going to end. I got about 2 minutes. I'm talking about, like, whenever you are in a meeting or any setting of Narcotics Anonymous, always remember that the broad of the base is the high point of freedom. The disease of addiction will keep you from receiving one phone number among thousands of people. Have you left a convention and not got just one fucking phone number? How do you do that? I don't know. I got a simple solution for it. Anytime you open your mouth, just ask somebody for the phone number. See, like, this is my gateway of asking y'all for the phone number. So, like, because I ain't never speaking, I ain't going to wait for y'all to give me no fucking phone number. I need help. Look, I need some phone numbers, right? You guaranteed a phone call. I guarantee you that. But this disease will, like, have me thinking that my life have gotten so good, really, that when I come to a convention, do a couple of meetings, look around and show y'all how pretty my damn car is, how pretty I'm dressed up, and how good I look, and don't you see the glow on me? And I can't even make it out the parking lot safe. Safe. I can't make it out the parking lot safe. I don't know. I am so grateful to this program for giving me some step work. Because over the last few years, my life have improved because I stopped being a fucking responsible grown up and actually started to grow up and take responsibility for my life. Look, I am no longer afraid of my wife leaving me. That is a hell of a move for me. That is a move for me because I came to understand that, look here, whether you go, the cat go, the dog go, whatever goes, I just can't go. I can't go. I can't leave Narcotics Anonymous. I can't go. Everything can go up in here, but I can't go. I'm not going. You have given me a reason to, look, to remove a lot of things and put me in a relationship with the God of my understanding that it, look, it combats the cunning baffles and cities with loving and caring and giving. I don't have to struggle and fight any longer just to get self-acceptance through other people. Then all of a sudden they change their fucking mind and I lose mine. I'm no longer sick of you. I'm sick of me being sick of me. But I'm blaming you. Newcomer. I'm leaning. The program in Narcotics Anonymous is a wonderful place. Forget all about the bullshit. Really. Because people, it's them hating motherfuckers up in here. They will sell you a bunch of their own self-loading crazy-ass bullshit. They will have you believing that this shit just don't work. It work on this hand, but yeah, I'm talking a lot of shit about this here. But let me tell you something. This program works if you, look, it don't say if they work it for you, it say it works if you work it. Look, my sole responsibility is my recovery. I want to come to a meeting. I gave him my fan, right? This is my fan. I'm going to show you, like, all them years of being crazy is because it's 6 year level. I lost my mind. 2 years later, I got it back. I'm in. I said I'm ending. I'm going to end. My fans say because, like, I found out the reason I was missing a lot of stuff was because, like I said earlier, when you come in the rooms and all of a sudden you got these preconceived ideas about every fucking thing that you're going to get. You don't, oh, they don't speak a certain way, they don't say a thing. I understand, I ain't not going to read something. Somebody's going to talk shit about me and I don't give a fuck. But I understand that. But look here. It was my responsibility when I came through that door. I had prayed. I need to pray for God, whatever, how crazy the speaker may be. However, what they say or don't say, I need to talk to my God before I came through that door, because it's my responsibility, my recovery, that God may change the words that come from the person's mouth into what I need to hear. My responsibility. Now, my fan says, sorry the meeting has started. For all the doctors, the lawyers, and people with fit multiple kids and who needs a cell phone in meetings and who feel that they need to show up at the meeting late and need to tell everybody that they got there. That needs all of this attention. When if you just came and sat down for the hour and a half, an hour, whatever, show up early, stay late. The hour and a half or whatever, watch this. Why my life is so good today? Thank God. I learned. They say, sorry, the meeting has started. I do not talk. So if you see me in a meeting, I'm not the one. I don't care. I'm not the one. Talk all you want to. I'm not answering your ass. It don't say that you can't talk to me. It say I don't talk. It's my responsibility. Another thing, I don't hug in meetings. Now I know what you're saying. Well, we hug in this fellowship. Yes, it says if we come early and stay late, we can get some hugs. But if you find in the literature where it says we hug in meetings, let me know. Because I wouldn't have put it on the fan if it said it. Or exchange phone numbers during the meeting. Now you got to remember the meeting has started. Now my responsibility, because my disease tells me, you don't know, my disease tells me that I need to get that number right here, right now, because I need it. Then I get the number and then I don't call the fucking person. Now here's the important. I do not talk on my phone. No, under no circumstances. I ain't no doctor. I ain't that important. If my wife gets sick, die, whatever happened to her, there's an ambulance, there's a medical center, there's somebody that can take care of her till I get there. I just ain't that important. Now watch. Fifth tradition. As individuals, we can get caught up in socializing with our friends. This is basic text, page one, fifth tradition, how it work, book page 161, just in case you want to get it. Socializing with our friends, ignoring other addicts who may be in pain and needs our encouragement. But each time our focus is diverted from our primary purpose, the addict seeking recovery loses out. Because the disease will have you, if I don't say nothing else, it will have you killing people right here because you think what's going on with you is more important than what's going on with everybody else in this room. I'm a grateful covenant addict. My name is Ulysses.